coach of the Bombers, Johnny Worsfold's in the studio with us. Welcome, Walsha.
Yeah, thanks very much, guys.
Excuse my voice. Great time to get you guys in. The season itself's always high pressure. I imagine this time of year you can just sit back a little bit and allow yourself to perhaps think about other things. You've been able to get away and have a bit of a spell?
Yeah, I had a good break in Perth. You know, it was through the trade period, so I was on the phone a little bit to Adrian Dodoro as we were mapping things out there. But other than that, it was a wonderful break. And, yeah, I'm excited to be back into it. You know, really looking forward to this season as the club's setting itself up in a really strong position for massive growth. And, you know, I'm keen to be part of that this year.
Do you see it as a bit of a test case for the rest of the competition, given the circumstances of the handover that's going to take place with Ben Rutten post-season 2020? I know you're not thinking about the rest of the competition, but do you have any fears or do you have any hesitancy about how it's going to play out?
I don't have any no fears and no hesitancy, but I know it's going to be hard work. Yeah, we've got to be committed to it, and we've got to our communication both between Ben and myself has to be spot on. And you know, I've really enjoyed having him at the club. He's a really motivated and driven young man. He's been working hard to improve himself through study, and I think he's going to do a wonderful job for the footy club. So, but it's going to be a massive change for him when he does step in as senior coach. So. We get the opportunity this year to start to expand his role as an assistant coach and let him know what else is going to take place, and hopefully have him way better prepared to step in as a senior coach than someone coming straight out of an assistant role.
John, why do you think this is going to work? Why are you convinced that this will work in your mind?
Because I'm committed to it. I think that's the number one thing, and Ben's really excited about it. So between us, you know, we've had a lot of discussions, and there'll be other things that will come up that will say, okay, well, who's taking lead responsibility in this area? Yeah. But, you know, I'm excited about that.
Right.
Any doubt and I'll take over.
So you're going to have to – do you think you're going to just have to massage those things as you go? Is that –
yeah,
there's certain what's in your mind about that?
Yeah, absolutely. No, we've already sort of set the platform for how we're operating through this pre-season. And then once the season gets closer and we get through the pre-season games, we'll have a lot better idea of how we want things to operate. And there'll be certain things that I'm in charge of through the first part of the year, but there'll be a gradual handover within the year. So, you know, they're the sort of things that we're just going to play it by ear, keep that open communication going and make those decisions along the way.
Football clubs are vastly different places than what they were when I played in Gary and probably when you played as well. Is it important for the players to know that there's one leader at the organisation in the coaching structure or not, do you think, now?
Yeah, I think the players need to know, you know, their go-to areas if they've got concerns and who is in charge of the program. So I don't think there'll be any doubt about that.
So you're in charge of the program, yes?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And Ben's going to be really hands-on with coaching the game plan. But I've got to make sure that that's filtered through consistently across both the coaching group and the playing group and everything. We're all on the same page with that. So, I think ultimately the players will be really clear about how things are running, how it's operating and who they need to go to and if they've got any queries or any doubts or they want answers on things, they'll be directed to the correct person. But as Ben and I have said, anyone who goes to Ben with an answer, he'll generally know how to direct them. And if he's unsure, he'll come to me.
Right.
And the same with me. There's times when people will come to me and I'll say, well, you can go direct to Ben and he'll talk to you about that.
The game plan, whose game plan is it then? Is it your game plan or will it be Ben's or will it be a consultative process between you, Ben, and the other coaches? Who sets the format for that?
Yeah, it's we've brought Blake Carosella in this year. So Blake's in charge of our attack. When we're in charge of the footy, Blake is going to direct how we want to move the ball. So it's really collaborative between Ben looking after defence, which he started to put into place throughout this football season. Blake comes in new, will add some layers to how we want to move the ball. Mark Harvey's going to work at the actual stoppage craft that the players are doing this year. So I've got to make sure all those guys are really communicating well together, that the players have clear line of sight on how it all fits together. I'm looking forward to that role.
So there's been the two most talked about succession plans have been the Malthouse Buckley and I guess more recently Roosie and Simon Goodwin. Have you spoken to either of the outgoing or the incumbents to take over?
Not about this specifically. And like all three are really different scenarios, really different situations. Melbourne had set a 2 or 3 year plan that Ruzy was going to work through and then hand over to someone. So they were actively looking for someone to come in and take over. And the Malthouse Buckley one, I'm not sure the exact details of how that all unfolded, but this is there's a lot of different things involved with this handover, both you know, my tenure and with my family situation, and not being able to commit to the club beyond the end of year by year, really, over the last 2 years. And I'm coming to the end of my contract, and it'll be 3 years that that I've been living in Melbourne away from the family. So taking all those things into account, you know, we're all clear on why this is in place and what we're going to achieve out of it, and really confident it's going to work well for us.
So you haven't come to the end of your love for footy, but you want to get back to Perth, which is absolutely understandable. So will you continue to pursue footy beyond next year?
I love the game, and I've got, you know, a wealth of experience in a lot of different situations at footy clubs, both as a player and captain, but you know, as a coach, and going through various scenarios, going through rebuilds, going through cultural issues where we had to you know, pair things right back and start almost from scratch. And you know, I've seen a situation in Adelaide with Walshy and working assisting Adelaide for a short period of time, and then coming into the scenario that was at Essendon with you know, a number of players suspended for a 12-month period. So
you recovered more than most, given that background,
yeah,
and so, circumstances.
Look, I've got a lot. I've certainly got a lot to offer in a wide array of areas in the game. I would love to still do that. So no doubt I'll be looking to work in footy.
Did you have any feelers this year from the West?
Nothing really strong, no, because I was committed to you know, the next 12 months with the Bombers. So, yeah, I'm not going to be you know, out there actively looking for something next year. I've got a lot on my plate to concentrate on, and that's where my commitment's going to be right through the course of the season. But, you know, who knows? Things may come up where people say, looking to 2021, what are you thinking? Where are you going to be? There may be opportunities, but my main focus obviously is going to be on the Bombers throughout the season.
During that trade period, John, we had the story of, you know, Joe Danaher wanting to leave, and then there was Ratio Fantasia. He wanted to get out of the club too. Both those players have been in the leadership group. The story was, yeah, what's wrong with Essendon? You've got two players that are in their leadership group. They both want to leave the club. How do you respond to that?
Well, the initial response was that Horatio never said he wanted to leave. He came out 6 weeks to go in the season and said, I'm going to be at Essendon next year. And then he never said anything else until the midway through the draft period, when he had to come out and say, I'm not going anywhere. So he's...
Right. So you're in your mind, he's 100% committed to staying at Essendon and wants to be at Essendon.
Yep, yeah. No doubt at all. And no doubt at all that Joey had requested the opportunity to go up to Sydney midway through a contract, which means when you sign a contract, you make a commitment. Clubs make commitment to players when they sign. You know, throughout any trade period, clubs throw players' names out there that are currently contracted and look to trade them out because your circumstances change as a club, and you don't always get those deals done. So those players stay and they're contracted, so you're committed to them. And that works the same if a player asks to trade. And that's happened, you know, every year at every club. Players asking to leave in contract, players being tried to be traded out that are in contract. They don't always come off. Sometimes they do. And all my experience says nothing changes with the player's attitude. They're driven young athletes that want to achieve and perform at the highest they can, regardless of what may have transpired in terms of possibilities. They commit, and then when they get through a season, they sit down and reflect on that again.
So you don't feel there's any need to rebuild or build a bridge between, say, you and Joe or the club and Joe Danaher? Do you think he's going to be, when he comes back, fully committed to...
I've got no doubt Joey will be fully committed, and I don't think we need to rebuild a bridge, but we need to communicate with him, understanding what's happened. You know, he's had a good break. He's been away. He's also been to Ireland on a training program with James Stewart and one of our physiotherapists. So he's fully committed in already. You know, our physio got back the other day and said everything really well. Joe was great. He was, just looked like Joe. He was up and about and really enjoying what he was learning from this physio program. And, I can't wait to see him back training with us because we haven't had him on the track a lot. And we love it when he's out there because even on the training track, he does special things.
Can he still be in the leadership group after what's taken place? Do you think?
No doubt he can, yeah. All you need to do is all be aligned and on the same page with what we're trying to achieve in the next 12 months. I can go way back, there was stuff around when Chris Judd took over the captaincy of West Coast and there were some questions about he didn't jump at it straight away. And I had a gut feel that it was because he felt he was likely to go back to Melbourne and he didn't want to leave the club as captain. Now, we didn't speak directly about it, but in a subtle way, you can work out how subtle this is. I said, Juddy, you're the right person to lead this club right now. It's what we need. You'll do a great job and no one will look at you any differently if you don't see out your career at West Coast as captain. And he took it on and he did a wonderful job. So, in a way, that was knowing someone wasn't going to be there for a long period of time, but he was the right person to lead us through a couple of seasons.
Who will make that decision with your leadership group? How does it come about at Essendon? I think all clubs are different, but how do you nominate your leadership or how do you come to your leadership group?
We ask the players to give every teammate on the training on the squad feedback on leadership criteria that they developed. There's six criteria, which are around how well they perform on game day, but also how well they live the team values and what their professionalism's like. They rate each other as a feedback system we have. It's not a voting system, but every player on the list gets feedback on areas of strength and areas of improvement in terms of those leadership criteria. So they're specific to the Essendon Football Club and specific to what the players developed. And then that gives the coaching staff really strong feedback on which players are seen as the strongest leaders in those criteria. We use that to help shape our thoughts on who the leaders are going to be. It's not necessarily the highest vote getters across all six, but it might be someone who's really high in showing that real care and empathy for each other, but might not be high in some other areas. But we want someone like that with that skill set on the leadership group. So we generally as coaches then have a round discussion about what that looks like and then we make a recommendation.
So last year, Hooker and Hurley out. Was that more from a player perspective or a coaching perspective?
That was around, so there were some reports written that they went out and were replaced by other guys, but Danaher and Fantasia were already in the leadership group in 2018 with Hooker and Hurley. We decided that we wanted to bring that group back from seven to a smaller group. That was in consultation with Dyson as captain. He had some specific ideas around how he wanted that group to work together. So we were looking at bringing that group back. So we had to have two less people on the leadership group than the previous year. So in discussions with those guys who we know are naturally strong leaders, but we're getting to the twilight of their career, the discussion and the feeling was that they can really just concentrate on their footy, still bring their own leadership, but they don't have to front up to the various leadership program that Dyson was keen to run and put extra expectations on those older players. So that was...
Well, Michael Hurley's not that old, is he?
No. Well, he would say he's young, yeah. So it's all around...
Is this strange? This is me.
Yeah,
from
sure.
The outside looking in, I'm looking at him as someone that I would, go to... come out of the trenches and love to come out with it. So I see him as a standout natural leader. And I don't know Ratio that well, and I don't want to cast aspersions over. But when I looked at that and when that announcement was made straight away, I went, geez, that's unusual. And it seemed to play out that way.
Yeah, so there's criteria that you're making your assessment on. You're making it on around...
I'm from afar.
Yeah, what Hurls brings. Hurls is an outstanding leader. Like, make no mistake about that. We've got other outstanding leaders on our list, Devin Smith, Dylan Shiel, that aren't on our leadership group. So we could have expanded it and said all these guys are, you can't split them. They all have different types of personalities, bring different leadership traits. But to me, they're all outstanding leaders. Guys like Andy McGrath and Marty Gleeson, really well respected. David Zarakis, strong leaders within our group. They all got highly rated in their feedback system. But we decided we want a group of five, and there were criteria around that, and that was the five we went for. And the discussion with Hurls and Hooksy was, you guys naturally are strong leaders, and we want you to continue to be yourselves around the club, which brings leadership. You don't have to have to say you're going to sit in a little group on a Monday morning to bring your leadership. That we debated strongly within the club, and it was a tough decision to make. But we decided to go with a five-man leadership group, and that means you can only have five on it.
John Moorside's with us in the studio, the Essendon coach. I said two-time premiership coach. In fact, premiership coach, premiership player. So two-time premiership football person. what Connor McKenna doing? He's a very important part of your setup. Love watching him and Saad and the rest of them come bouncing off halfback. He's gone home and he started playing Gaelic footy.
Yeah. No, again, that was something that we weren't aware of. We certainly didn't send him back there to play footy. I was really disappointed when I heard that because we know that he's passionate about his Gaelic footy. He's passionate about footy. He's an energetic young man. You know, his personality is so up and about. So I can imagine them saying, you know, you want to have a kick.
They all did it. Jimmy did it. Sean White did it. They all did it.
Look, it puts them at risk. Puts them at risk of an injury, of doing something that's outside their contract.
Yeah, so,
like, in effect, it puts them at a high risk of costing themselves a contract or a lot of money if they get a serious injury. But, you know, I've reflected on it and, you know, I won't speak to Connor until he gets back and I will be disappointed that he played and at least didn't feel like he could have rung and just checked. You know, I would have loved him to
You would have known the answer.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Or we could he might have had a compelling argument. Like, I think it was only last weekend from all accounts. He would have been due to do a 7 or 8 kilometre footy-type session, kicking the ball, running flat out. This will be his argument, I can tell you, but he went and did it in a non-contact environment. So out of everything you can do as a footballer off-season, go and play non-contact football would be the best.
Yeah.
Better than going and doing going snow skiing or playing basketball or playing rugby, something that you don't do day in, day out. He went and did something that's probably the safest form of exercise that he could possibly do. He just did it in a competitive environment, even though it's a non-tackling and non-collision environment. So
who spoke to him, had spoken to him from the club?
Dan Richardson would have tried to get hold of Connor, or would have at least spoken to his management, and we'll sort that out when he gets back. It's hard having the conversation with him right now. Yeah. Like it might be because if there's another game on this week, don't play.
Yeah.
But when you get back, we'll just talk through why it's not appropriate and the risks that you're taking. But in terms of physical risks, I'm pretty comfortable that he wasn't putting himself at massive danger. As I said, players at that stage of their off-season are starting to really ramp up getting ready for full training, and they should be running flat out and they should be kicking the ball. And, in terms of doing something out of the ordinary, he certainly didn't do that.
Yeah.
You got a couple of players in during the trade period. Did you get what you wanted? Did you get what you need for this next stage of Essendon's development?
Yeah, well, we certainly needed to add to our ruck list. You know, we had Zach Clark on the list, and I was really pleased with what Zach brought to the club this year. But we're looking to say, can we step up a notch in that? And we feel that Andrew Phillips can do that for us. And so we've added Andrew Phillips, and that meant Zach Clark didn't have a spot on the list. And we've added Tom Cutler, who's, a taller, hard-running mid-wing.
You see him as a wingman?
Wingman and halfback. I think he can play either role. He covers the ground really well. I think his previous season where he played a lot on the wing at Brisbane was a really solid season and showed he was at an above average level as a wingman in that season. And then with his injury and opportunities through this year, we didn't see anything of him. So we still feel he can step in and add some real strong value to us.
Does Hayden Skipworth's departure, A, did it catch you by surprise, and D, how hard does it make life for you as a coaching group in the short term?
Yeah, it catches you by surprise at this time of year. You know, I was really clear that Hayden has been at Essendon for a long time, and the next step for him, potentially for growth, is to go and experience another club and work under a different coach. And so I wasn't surprised that he was looking for other opportunities. But the fact that it came so late, you know, once we got to November, you start to think most clubs are settled now. So we know what we've got. But, you know, Dan Jordan, who's been at the club for a few years now, is a real high potential young coach. You know, really regard him extremely highly, and it opens up an opportunity for him. He's run our VFL program, taken the team to the last two prelim finals in really tough circumstances with some of the injuries we've had, and great relationship with the playing group, both the VFL guys and the AFL listed guys, and it just opens up a wonderful opportunity for him. I'm really pleased to see him step into that role. So it does then have the roll down effect. Now we're looking for a senior coach for our VFL program, so we're onto that straight away.
Hey, it's great to have you in. We just said in the ad break, it's hard to get a hold of coaches in long form during the season, so to be able to sit down for half an hour is fantastic. Really appreciate it, and good luck. It's going to be a really interesting year.
It will be. Thanks very much.